If you tune into AM 950 about 9 o'clock, you may have noticed that we have some different programming there this year. It's David Pakman. He does a show daily, internationally syndicated politics and news talk show that's on radio, TV, and the internet, now on AM 950. And today, you don't have to wait until 9 o'clock to hear David Pakman because he joins me right now. Hi, David. How you doing?
Oh, doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you on here. Glad that you're part of the AM 950 broadcasting family. You know, for those folks who don't stay up till 9 o'clock, there are a few of us. Tell us about your show and how it got started.
Yeah, it started actually when I was in college as an internship in a basement community radio studio. And fortunately, through a combination of timing, luck, and I hope some of my own hard work, it's grown to be a syndicated show, like you mentioned. We're on a couple hundred radio and television stations, satellite TV. We've got a big online presence and a staff now of actual people. It's not just me sitting in a room by myself anymore. So it's just been an incredible process.
How did it manage to grow? Did you have some lucky breaks? What was the impetus here that got you kind of pushed out there that far?
There was no single big break, really. It was just slow and steady growth, grinding it out, calling a lot of stations, offering the show to them, trying to get, you know, from 1,000 YouTube subscribers to 2,000 and then to 3,000 and sort of really just putting together a new show. Originally, it was only once every other week, and now, like you mentioned, it's a daily show, and just kind of, listen, do it 10 years, and a lot of it is showing up, and that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, I think I looked at YouTube today. I think you're getting close to 500,000 subscribers. That's a pretty impressive number, so it shows a lot of growth, and it's good that you got a lot of people paying attention. And paying attention is a hard thing these days because there's so much going on. How do you pick what you're going to focus on? I mean, I have that issue every day. There seems to be a fire hose of news. What dictates what you're going to put on your show?
Yeah, it's a real tough thing that we're dealing with right now because stories that in a sort of normal political environment would be, a 3, 4, or even 7 day scandal, so to speak, sometimes barely even register. They're like, you know, the 5th, 6th, or even 7th biggest story of the day. So it's tough because number one, we're sort of trying to fight the desensitization that's going on, the hyper-normalization of a lot of really not normal things that are taking place. And then when you do a show like mine where we have an hour a day, it really is zero sum. Any story that I select pushes out necessarily other stories that might be valuable. So my approach is really a mix of what's important, urgent in the immediate, but also trying to balance that out with some of what is going on that's really going to have a longer term impact, and not just going with the daily scandals, but talking about the attempts that are being made to shift around how our tax money is used and really decisions that government is making that will have a long term impact. So it's sort of a mix between science and art, picking the stories each day.
And I noticed you pick on stuff here that maybe the legacy media, the mainstream media, whatever you want to call them, doesn't always pick up on. Case in point, yesterday, your show, you were talking about Raj Shah. I got questioned right away in the White House press briefing about just, hey, how do we know that the stuff you're telling us just isn't BS? Because everything you tell us here lately turns out to be not true. And, you know, I appreciate that, you know, the refreshing question comes out like that, but I saw no play of that anywhere else except on your show.
Yeah, and, you know, part of the problem actually is that it's not seen as the normal way that the press corps deals with spokespeople. So I think that you would see much more play of it in corporate media if it was much more common. And I think a good way to contrast it is recent coverage in the Netherlands when Donald Trump's ambassador to the Netherlands, Pete Hoekstra, said all sorts of demonstrably false things, going back during a 5-minute interview saying he never called something fake news when he did, being taken to task for having said that there are politicians that were burned to death in the Netherlands, just really false things. And the way that the press corps there handled it was very different than what we're used to here in the United States. And that's really the approach I'd like to see the press corps take. But here there's this constant fear of losing access that no one really wants to be too tough on the spokespeople that are put out there. Because what they'll do if they don't like your line of questioning is they'll kick you out or they'll stop doing briefings, which we've seen both attempted by the current suite of spokespeople, and you lose access. And that creates a real fear for corporate media of holding these people accountable.
Case in point here again, yesterday, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the regular press secretary, comes out and usually does a briefing, out and out lies by her, talking about the whole citizenship question on the census, insisting over and over again when she was asked about it that, well, it's been on every census here since whatever until 2010 when we took it off and we think we should bring it back, when really that question has been gone for a long time and was only on certain things that the census did to get information for the Voting Rights Act. But nobody called her out on it during that news conference.
That's right. Now, it's possible that in the moment, nobody knew, which means that in today's press briefing, if there is one, the right thing would be to say, Sarah, yesterday you told us that the question about citizenship has been on every census since 1965, other than 2010. That wasn't true. Can you tell us where you got that information? Or are you issuing a retraction, right? That's how today's press briefing should start, if there is one. I haven't watched. I don't know if that's how it went. That would be the right way to handle it.
Well, there was, and that didn't happen that way. Nobody brought it up. It was yesterday's news, and that's the problem. Things go from one news cycle to the next, and people were on to the next scandal, and the other scandal never gets resolved. And that gets to be very, very frustrating.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, I mean, just there's dozens and dozens of examples of this, but you might remember, or you might not, which is sort of by design, that back during the campaign, it was revealed that the current First Lady of the United States was apparently working illegally here in the United States, here on a visa that did not allow her to work, was doing modeling work. And we were told at the time that there's going to be a press conference where we will explain this. It's been a year and a half. Who even remembers that, right? That's just one of dozens examples of how they just move on to the next thing.
Well, it was brought up today that Donald Trump has not held a regular news conference where it's announced ahead of time and he's the person answering questions for more than a year. More than a year. And we have, I mean, that is something that's not normal in any administration. The fact that the president is not answering questions, does not open himself up to being asked questions, that really, I think, is lost on people because, the president reaches out, gets to control his own message through Twitter, but doesn't have to answer to any reporters for, lie after lie after lie that he puts out there. I mean, it's well documented that the guy just doesn't have a good relationship with the truth.
Yeah, and it's not only by design, but it's also incredible hypocrisy, because one of the criticisms of Hillary Clinton throughout the campaign was, why isn't she just facing questions in an open press conference? Mm-hmm. Why won't she do it? And of course, now you're seeing the exact same thing. And I mean, at this point, almost every Trump story has some degree of hypocrisy or a double standard, where it's becoming almost a truism to even point it out.
We're speaking with David Pakman. You can hear his show 9 o'clock here on AM 950 every weeknight. One of the topics here I wanted to hit on you with is the wall, because President Trump this past weekend tweeted, or it seemed to indicate, that he was going to build the wall without congressional approval, essentially using military money. And I don't think that's really sunk in on people on how big of a breach of the Constitution that might be.
Yeah, I actually am less able to speak to the constitutionality of it, but what I can tell you is that there's sort of two main stories in there for me. One of them is the moving of the goalposts that has taken place, and this is something that every time the wall is discussed should be brought up, which is, we were told that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. Who's talking about that at this point? Now the question is, how much money can Trump get Congress to appropriate, and can he get military money or the military to build the wall? And the sort of most important sort of logistical question at this point is that even if the idea is to use military resources to build the wall, those also have to be appropriated by the House of Representatives. It's not really a solution to the funding problem that Trump is having with the wall. And again, it's part of this. Every one of these stories has like two, three, or even four layers of both ignorance and hypocrisy that have to be unpacked to get down to the truth. And there's just not enough bandwidth for critical media to really do all of the unpacking.
I mean, for me, the wall pretty much has been something that Trump uses to fire up the base. Case in point today, you know, Mike Pence was in town here in Minneapolis and again brings it up and says, we will eventually build it all. And of course, all of the folks who have, you know, come down to listen to Pence are cheering like crazy about that. That's firing up the base. It's helping them raise money. The fact that it doesn't even get built, I don't think matters to the Republican Party. I don't think it matters at all, because all it is about is having a wedge issue that you can get people to go, yeah, 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 about. And they know, oh, it's Donald Trump. Well, we don't care. It's that he believes in us and he's one of us. I mean, this is tribalism. This is tribalism that we're fighting here. And I don't know how you get past that. People who just say, I believe because I'm on his team, and I really don't care whatever he's saying, but I'm on his team. That seems to be a lot of Trump's base right now.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a cognitive dissonance that you're identifying there, which is if he does it, then that's great. And if he doesn't, it's because he was thinking and dreaming really big because he's a political outsider, and that's why I support him, or he wasn't able to do it because Democrats stood in the way, even though Republicans control the House and Senate. But there's sort of another layer to it as well when we talk about the wall, which is even if it gets built, it actually doesn't solve the problem that supposedly it's going to solve, because a significant portion of undocumented immigrants in the United States, they're not crossing the U.S.-Mexico border, right? They're flying in either as tourists or overstaying visas. And we can have a debate about the merits of deportation, non-deportation, DACA. I'm not even talking about that. From a purely pragmatic point of view, there's the idea of the wall as solving the problem of undocumented immigration, but then there's the reality that it wouldn't even. And you're right, which is that Trumpists don't really care about that. It's the idea of the wall that they like.
The evangelicals supported Trump a lot. Trump is now facing all sorts of, he was facing this before the election, he's facing it now, all sorts of accusations here. Stormy Daniels, the latest example, and Stormy Daniels now apparently progressing towards having Trump deposed, you know, actually having to do what he doesn't do with reporters, sit down and answer questions. And, you know, two things. One, is that actually going to happen? Because there is precedent with Bill Clinton. And two, if that does happen, is his evangelical base going to even care?
Right. So for the first question, I don't know. From what I'm seeing from legal experts, it's unlikely to happen despite the legal precedent. I think the second question is the more interesting one, which is will the hardcore Trump voter really care? And the answer is no, right? The answer is no, because they've already rationalized away all of those allegations. There was actually, CNN did a very interesting panel the other night where they had 8 or 10 Trump-supporting women watch the Stormy Daniels interview on 60 Minutes from earlier this week, from Sunday night on CBS. And then they just straight up asked them, do you believe Stormy Daniels? The answer was mostly no. With a few exceptions, there was also the answer that even if it is true, this is Donald Trump's private life. Of course, that's logic that didn't apply to Bill Clinton. She's looking for attention. She's not credible. We don't believe it. So you could have another 15 women come out with similar stories, and it's really not going to impact the sort of ideologically committed Trump voter.
Another place where Donald Trump is facing court action is in Washington, D.C., in Maryland. The court cases there that say that he's violated the emoluments clauses, that thing that most people don't understand, that you can't take money from foreign governments if you're the president. It's written into the Constitution, something that a lot of people don't pay attention to. Today, there was a ruling that said that this case does have standing. And that's the initial legal hurdle, finding that the plaintiffs can sue the president in the first place. The real question to me is, Is this going to go any further? Do you have any thoughts on this case? You've been paying attention to it?
I have been paying attention to it, and an interesting element of it is that, number one, the contributions don't necessarily have to be money given directly to the president, which of course is not what we're talking about here. Mostly the focus is on foreign diplomats who are, in order to ingratiate themselves with Trump, proactively choosing to stay at his resorts, which of course will hotels, which will sort of eventually get to funding his family and his personal finances. The other thing is that it's not just limited to the president. So as interesting as it is that the president is directly involved in these emoluments circumstances, this also applies to other individuals that are either officially or unofficially involved with Trump's administration. Ivanka Trump is in an interesting place because while on the one hand she can't legally have a formal position with Trump because of the nepotism laws, she is representing the U.S. on the behalf of his administration around the world and is still benefiting to the tune of about $1 million a year from these businesses. So it's actually the emoluments question is a super interesting one, and it could wrap up more than just Trump before it's all said and done.
We're speaking with David Pakman. His show is on here at 9 o'clock tonight. We're almost out of time, David, but I just did want to mention one other topic here. Mike Pence, I said, was in town today. The blowback on Pence right now, the Democratic Party here is pointing to what Pence is peddling, which is the Republicans' tax plan that's now our tax law. They're calling it Robin Hood in reverse. It takes from hardworking Minnesotans to give massive tax breaks to the wealthy. As we look at the 2018 election, do you think that is going to have any traction, or just like everything else here that we're talking about, is going to fall to the wayside?
I think it definitely has the potential to have traction because people do in many cases vote their checkbook. The issue that's going to come up is that a new poll out in the last 24 hours shows that a majority of Americans are not actually seeing more money in their paychecks on the basis of the new withholding table. So we were initially told almost everyone gets a tax cut. It's going to be fantastic for everybody. We knew, though, that it's disproportionately good for the very rich. We knew that a lot of the provisions are temporary so that over the long term, people would see tax increases. But what we're now seeing is that even in the short run, more than half of Americans have not actually seen more money in their paychecks. So I think that it is potentially a voting issue. And increasingly, the data is not particularly favorable to those who were expecting to have more money in their paychecks. I know that based on my tax situation and that of all my staff, we do actually see a little bit of extra money in our paychecks, but that's anecdotal. And the big picture seems to be that what was promised is not happening for now.
All right. David is on at 9 o'clock. What's your show about tonight? What are people going to hear when they tune in?
We're talking about a lot of different things tonight, including this report from Reuters or the Associated Press, actually both reporting on it, that after a meeting in China between Kim Jong-un and the Chinese president, that Kim Jong-un has sort of agreed in principle to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, which is very interesting wording, and it has a lot of sort of historical connotation. So that's our lead story, and then we've got a lot of other things we're talking about as well.
All right. David Pakman, you can hear him here on AM 950 starting at 9 o'clock, 9 to 10 o'clock every night, Monday through Friday. David, thank you for taking the time today. Really appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.